even if you're just working the counter or you're working in the drive-through window, you have that opportunity to connect with somebody, you know, take advantage of it. You know, even if it's just something as small as, you know, making it personal and smiling and being genuine, you know, there is that connection there. And that goes all the way up to, you know, some of the extremely nice fine dining restaurants.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 114 with restaurant consultant and viral blogger, Mike Thorpe.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, JC Preston, and co-hosting today with me is Veronica Kieran, again, founder of the Fempreneur Forum group on Facebook. Thank you for joining us today in this session. If this is the first time you're listening in, if this is a show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you do your life's work and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. It is January of 2018, guys, and as you know, 2017 just blew by, and a lot of us might have already given up on our New Year's resolutions. What's great, though, is that you can always set new goals for yourself. It doesn't have to rely on any one particular day, especially a day that was created by other humans, right? So maybe you want to start a new job or a career, you know, start looking for something as soon as you get home today. You know, you can make this a habit. Learn more about the favorite subject of yours and join us in the Junto to get started on the right foot if, you know, a mission-based business is something that you want to do. And if it isn't yet, you know, you can hop onto Indeed.com and see what positions are available that you could start working towards. But we'd still love to see you in the Junto. Speaking of career changing, today's guest is someone that is right in the middle of getting their business launched. And his name is Mike Thorpe. And back in September, he posted a post on Medium about why he had to turn off Gary V. As you guys know, listening to content like this can be beneficial. In this show, for example, not only do you learn tips on how to run a successful business, but you also get to see the perspectives of why people even stepped out on their own in the first place and what made them feel like they could do this thing on their own. And however, if you listen or watch content too much, then you might not actually do what they're talking about. Yeah, you become somewhat of a content addict, I guess you could say, and you start living vicariously through the guests of the show. And that's what Mike felt like he was doing with Gary's show. So today, we'll hear all about why he felt it was necessary to drop his habit of listening to Gary, why he chose to leave a successful corporate position to start his restaurant consulting business, and what he's looking forward to helping college students and restaurant owners with. Before we get into that, I'm going to give you a little bit of reminder about Fizzle. And what you're going to find out in today's chat is that having your own business can be exciting yet scary at the same time. And sure, you might have the mission factor figured out, you know, the why, and the how. But it's another thing altogether to know how to run a business, and especially online business. But once you have it figured out, though, it's totally worth it. But question is, where do you get started? Well, sure, you can spend tons of time on different Facebook groups trying to learn free tips in there. Nothing wrong with that. I do it myself. Or you can spend a fortune on a course that might or might not help you with the problems you actually have. I've done that too. But why waste your time and resources if you don't need to? You guys have heard me talk about Fizzle for years now. And it's, you know, for me, I think it's honestly the best business school that I've seen online. You know, they cover all the fundamentals of being an online business owner and plenty more. You know, if you want real connections, info, and feedback on what you're doing, they got your back. Corbett, Chase, and Steph, and I would say a good part of the community over there, there's a lot of diehards that are in there that are experts in their own right. You know, they can help you go faster. And there's so much experience. I mean, there's just so much experience over there. As a member, you have access to training courses, guidance for the next step, and insanely valuable feedback on their weekly coaching calls. And unlike most large free groups, there's no agenda because you're already a paying member. And because they don't have an upsell, you get equal treatment as a newbie as you would as a longtime member or more experienced member. I mean, that's what they're there for, is to get everybody an equal playing field. So try it out today for 5 weeks free by visiting newinceptions.com/fizzle. Again, that's newinceptions.com/FIZZLE. Okay, guys, so show notes and show note extras of our conversation with Mike are at newinceptions.com/114. And as usual, I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the show. JC and Veronica here with you today and today's session. How you doing today, Veronica?
What's up? How's everybody doing? Yeah, I'm good.
Good. Good.
Yeah. Spent the weekend dancing like crazy down here. There was a big event here in the city. Our guests might have actually heard about it. So I had painful feet all day Sunday, and it was worth it.
Yeah. Sounds exciting. Was it like a festival or?
No. One of the big hotels downtown throws a party every year called Bow Ties and Stilettos. And everybody comes out. I wore a fur, got the heels on. It was great.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, I can imagine how fun that would be. That'd be cool. Is that somewhat like kind of a swing dance sort of situation? Or
the swing crowd does turn out. And so we were doing blues, swing, merengue, and salsa throughout the night. I also did the worm. My hallmark. Nobody that I know got it on film, but is definitely on 10 different smartphones at least. So
that's funny.
It will be somewhere.
Well, that's cool because when I was back at Purdue, I was actually in the salsa and swing clubs. And so yeah, definitely appreciate that that stuff. So anyway, as we're going on here, today's guest is actually we were talking about a fellow Grand Rapidian. I don't know what you guys call yourself.
Grand Rapidian.
Grand Rapidian.
Rapidian.
Yeah, you know, I actually found him in a piece on Medium.com where he was writing about why we have to turn off the Gary V, or why he had to turn off Gary V, which we'll be getting more into later in the conversation. And having moved from Houston, Texas at the age of 16 to play hockey in Michigan, today's guest has a background in restaurant operation and helping restaurants up their game. And however, he wasn't doing it on his own until recently. There were signs in his life that he should be, but like many of us, had problems pulling the switch. And so finally, at the age of 32, he thought he might as well give it a shot. So today's guest is Mike Thorpe. Mike, thanks for coming on the show with us today, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Glad to have you on.
Yeah,
Grand Rapids all the way.
Yeah, we're definitely going to scheme and plot against JC now because we're here together.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about the work that you do, Mike. I mean, I'm having kind of a mental picture of you as maybe a young Gordon Ramsay doing that, you know, kitchen nightmare kind of work. Is that about right? Or what do you do?
Yeah. So the best way that I can describe it to people is sort of a mix of, kitchen nightmares and the show The Prophet.
Okay.
Sort of going in, helping where I can. I'm fortunate enough to have had a lot of experience in so many different aspects of restaurants, where I'm trying to bring that and convert that into, locally owned, mom and pop, single owner type places, and, really just help them with the everyday struggles of it. The biggest thing that, a lot of us struggle with in every aspect of life is time and money. And I feel that a lot of my experiences and time growing up through the corporate environment has allowed me to figure out how to help these people, get more of their time back and then ultimately make more money.
That's
and how did you get into restaurant corporate work? I mean, was this something, did you start out working in restaurants early on or what?
So my first restaurant job was when I was 17. It was at a local coffee shop. and I had really was supplementing income from coaching hockey. When I was 17, 18 is when I stopped playing hockey. I moved to Michigan to play juniors over in Detroit. And, you know, it just didn't work out the way that I thought it would. I knew at some point that I always wanted to be a server or a bartender or something in restaurants. And coaching allowed me to be able to get up early and work at a coffee shop. So it started there. And then I got into a bartending job. And, you know, I had no idea at this point what I was going to do with my life. I was expecting to go to Michigan State and play hockey. And that wasn't working out. So I had a mentor who had offered me a management position. I turned it down twice, and he finally asked me why. And basically, I just didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And he told me that I didn't need to go to school for it. The corporate restaurant that I was at would provide an opportunity for training, provide an opportunity for experience. And really, it was some of the best advice that I've ever had. So, you know, I listened, I got into the program, and I loved it.
I just had like an image of Tom Cruise in Cocktail. He said you were thinking about being a bartender, and I was like, oh yeah, and like spinning and tossing.
You know, the irony of that is the first restaurant that I bartended at had the bartenders learning how to do flair, and it was the kind of place that had really no business with their bartenders needing to do flair. So it's kind of funny that you say that. You've got a bartender doing flair on one side and then a salad bar on the other side. Didn't exactly make a lot of sense.
When I became 21, I actually went to what's called here in Indianapolis is the Midwest Bartenders Academy. And so I did bartending myself for a couple of years. It was always interesting being able to be on that side of a counter, I guess you could say. But at this place, they would make sure that you could, you know, make I think it was 10 or 15 drinks within like 5 minutes or so, something ridiculous.
Oh,
intense!
You didn't have to do flair, but there, if people wanted to stay afterwards, they could learn from the guy that was actually teaching the course at the time, which had been like a flair champion in his past life or something like that. And so he would do all the simple movements and all that sort of stuff. And I was just,
That's super cool.
We need to have a drink at your house sometime soon.
That's right.
No. I think Mike's probably more in practice than I am anymore. I can make a good old fashioned, but that's about it.
I can make the drink. If you want me to do flair, you're out of luck. Unless you're entertained by breaking bottles.
Well,
So you got into this training position and you're in the corporate setting. And so how many years were you doing that?
Well, at the first corporate restaurant I was at, I was there for about 4 years. And, you know, I was in a position where I sort of wanted to see another side of it, whether it was you know, marketing or, you know, developing training programs or those other things that are just outside of the day-to-day operations. And I was lucky enough to find another corporate group who was in a transition period. They were a large group that was recently sold to a private equity firm at this time. And I got in right at the ground floor as far as marketing was concerned. So I got to be involved in, you know, some of the marketing promotions, some of the data analysis of those promotions. And I was basically doing that 3 days a week and then in operations 2 days a week. So that was really neat.
Okay.
And a new experience for me, something different. And, you know, I did that for a couple of years before, you know, unfortunately, sometimes in the corporate environment, especially when a restaurant is owned by a company or a group of people who, you know, don't really know the business as well, they're going to either, you know, make some decisions that aren't necessarily the best for that restaurant, or they're going to get out of it as quickly as possible. And in this particular case, that's what ended up happening. They were sold to another group who came in and sort of wiped clean everything that I had been working on for those 2 years. So,
oh, wow. Wow.
Well, you know, it was hard at the time. But then I got to, you know, my next position with the next company was really unique. It was a local group of about 20 restaurants. You know, in West Michigan, which was really great just because of the difference of dealing with 20 local restaurants compared to, you know, 200 restaurants across the entire country, or in the specific case, you know, I had 84 just in the Northeast that I was working with. So one experience led to another.
Yeah. Nice. And so one of the things obviously you've seen over the years is that, you know, leadership is all about, you know, proper leadership is about being able to build culture within a given organization. And you had mentioned that in your work today that you have an uncommon approach to leadership and building a significant working attitude with employees. And I'm kind of curious about that because, you know, my background is in organizational leadership. And so kind of anytime this topic pops up, it's like, oh, there go my antenna. So, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, restaurants in particular, you know, these are the places where I would, at least my perspective is that everybody has to be on the same page or nothing is going to work, because everything that is Gordon Ramsay, it's like, that's what it seems. It's like everybody has to be going in the same direction. It's kind of like a football team that everybody has to be where they're supposed to be or nothing's going to get done. Is that about right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think what's really important is whoever's in that comes from a corporate standpoint as well. I mean, you know, from restaurant to restaurant basis, it all starts with a vision. Mm-hmm. And if you're a manager or a general manager of a corporate restaurant, if you don't have a vision for your particular restaurant, then, you know, you're sort of just out there, you know, waiting for things to come at you instead of kind of going on offense and really controlling what your vision is, whether it's for an individual, whether it's for the entire restaurant, and you kind of reverse engineer it from there. You know, it's so incredibly important. And I think one of the greatest things that I have had, you know, the ability to kind of analyze what's happening in so many different environments is that if there isn't that consistency and there isn't that constant communication of, you know, things are working in this direction and, you know, this particular action or even, you know, an entire shift sort of sets us back, and being able to have the communication of why and being able to say, hey, this is what happened. This is why I feel like today was a setback towards our vision, and this is what we're going to do tomorrow to kind of get back on track. You know, acting as quickly as possible and communicating to wherever those missteps happened is so incredibly important, because if you let it go, you know, you could be a week, 2 weeks, and you're dealing with the same issues.
Right.
So for me, one of the you know, strategies that I've had is whatever that vision is, it needs to be clearly defined in the interview process. You know, that is sort of where the training starts. And that's something that I think that has kind of been a lot of aha moments for people that I've talked to and that I've helped to develop that strategy is, you know, if you set that expectation at the beginning before you've even brought a person in, then on their orientation, they're hearing that same message through their training, they're seeing that message put into practice, and then as soon as they're out on the floor training or they have their, you know, their first days, first weeks, first months on their own, they're seeing that those things are important. They're hearing that message from their department manager or their general manager and really enforcing whatever that vision is. So it's so important to define that in the first place and then communicating that in every way possible.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that most of the restaurants that fail, I mean, is that one of the big reasons, is that they just have no vision of where they want the restaurant to go? I mean, once they get it started, it's like, you know, there's a lot of hoorah that goes into, you know, getting it started. But, you know, maybe 6 months down the line, do they still have the same energy and vision for what it's supposed to be? What do you think?
I think you nailed it on the head. You know, being able to starting a restaurant and being able to know, hey, this is where I want to be in 2 years, and having that vision, even, you know, I say 2 years, but, and that's a short period of time for startups, but in restaurants, you know, you can fail very quickly in the first 12 months, 24 months. So, you know, having that vision and being able to communicate that consistently, I think what happens is people just get overwhelmed with the process. A lot of people have, and I don't want to say it as trust issues, but that's really what it comes down to. They don't want to let go of certain aspects that they want to be in control of. And you know, that tends to bog people down. I mean, ironically, you know, literally 5 minutes before we started this, just someone walked into my office who, no appointment or anything. They just sort of heard what I was doing. And this is the exact story. They're 12 years into this. And, you know, her thing was, I'm tired of working 12 to 17 hours a day, 7 days a week. So my thing is, well, let's solve that for you. And there's so many different ways to do it. But I think that the hard part is people put themselves on an island, especially, they don't want to either A, reach out. They don't know how to reach out. And they feel like they've got to put everything on their shoulders, which is exhausting in and of itself. And then to go and run a business that requires your attention, 24/7.
It sounds like a little bit too that, like, the things that I see with my coaching and web clients, that there's an idea of, okay, I built it, and so they will come, and it needs so much more nurturing than that, but with a long-term vision so you can get out.
Right. And that's, this person that I just talked to, her thing was, I love this restaurant, but I want to, either rebrand it, refresh things so that I can be done in the next 8 years. That's great. I think that that's a wonderful thing. She has a vision. She just doesn't know how to use it yet. So
yeah,
that's where I think even just having that connection and that support that I can provide, and because there's a lot of details that I can help people with, but it's just helping them have that and see that vision and see what the process is to get there. Because you can know what you're feeling, you can know the struggles that you're going through, but you really don't know how to get out of it because you have everything else that's so immediate. I mean, running a restaurant, your doors open at whatever time that they open, and after that, you really have no flexibility to focus on the future or focus on the brand. It's all about that shift.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what bogs people down.
You just said about being able to reach out and get additional help and things like that. And one of the things that you also mentioned is that you connect local colleges with their students who are looking for a mentorship, or, they're just really passionate students in what they're wanting to do. I'm assuming that this is through internships of some sort. How does that all work?
So I want to, my long-term strategy is to be able to provide internships, wherever it may be. I mean, my company is very young, so I'm doing everything. It would be really neat to have some interns helping with some of the, marketing or content creation and all those types of things. But really, more than anything, just like when I was young and I had a manager who gave me that advice, they're obviously in school, so I'm not going to necessarily tell them to not be in school because that may not be right for their particular environment. But I honestly, the mentorship is just something that I want to completely provide for free, and just kind of as that relationship building, and just listening. Because one thing that I've learned through hiring people who go through culinary school is that their practical application of what they're learning is so different than when you walk into an environment that is in an existing restaurant, especially one that's busy and that is a complete beast. And it's not just something that you can just train in school. The mental toll that it takes, the physical toll that it takes, that's hard to prepare someone for unless they're working those types of jobs while they're in culinary school. So yeah. I think for me, the biggest thing was just, like I said, being able to reach out to those people and provide, whatever type of value I can, just from that standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one thing to also, do you ever see the movie Chef?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That, just the difference between, what he's doing there at the beginning to doing the food truck, and then taking after the food truck, building his vision to what he wants his future place to be. It's kind of exactly what you're kind of all talking about here, is that transition between those different modes, like a little bit,
No, it's so true. So true. I mean, everyone coming out of culinary school wants to have the Michelin stars and the highest rating and this and that. Well, unfortunately, that's a process.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you have those goals, but you have to look at it from a standpoint of, hey, are you willing to go into a project with very little money, start a food truck just to raise capital to invest in your next restaurant that's hopefully going to make you a lot of money. And then, you know, like you said, kind of go into that next step, whatever that may be. It's, I mean, it is such a process. And, you know, sometimes that's, you know, and another thing I've seen people do is they'll have a consistent job and then they'll do private events on the side. And with that same mindset and that same process to build something, you know, down the road. So I think that just being able to help people see that vision and kind of a dose of reality, you know, the biggest thing that, that I try to provide for any client or any, you know, mentor relationship is 100% honesty as quickly as possible. If there's something that I feel that isn't, you know, the best way that it could be, or something that I feel like is dragging their business down, I'm going to provide honest feedback as quickly as possible because I don't want that to drag out any longer. And if that, I believe, is a real roadblock, then we need to get past that because, you know, I mean, it's so hard to watch people, you know, spend time and money when it's something that as an owner or as a manager, you know, you're in control of that. So let's get past and be courageous to address whatever that is, and whether it's hard or not. And most of the time it's hard. That's why it hasn't been addressed, and, you know, move forward.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a similar problem that I've seen in the art community too. Any of these ancient crafts, things that have been being taught for a long time, have kind of escaped the business mentality. And so students are coming out of university totally prepared to do their craft, but not prepared to sell their craft. And then they, like you're saying, they kind of get stuck in their career and they're not sure what to do next.
Completely. That's a very great comparison.
Do you do any work with restaurants outside of the West Michigan area now, or are you focused solely on the greater Grand Rapids, West Michigan area?
So I physically, I'm working with restaurants in Grand Rapids, okay. West Michigan, Grand Haven, Holland. But one thing that and you had mentioned it before, you know, with the Gary Vaynerchuk piece, is I've kind of connected with a lot of people in that community just through social media. And one thing that happened is I have connected with some restaurants that I can communicate with and you know, really provide advice to just through social media, through, you know, phone calls. And, you know, for those types of things right now, I'm not even interested in, you know, trying to charge people for that. I just, every conversation I have, every time I learn something new about a struggle that a restaurant has, is bringing me value as well. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if it's a 30-minute conversation here and there, then, you know, really that's not taking away from what I'm doing. So ironically enough, me being from Houston, and obviously with the hurricane recently, there is a huge group of restaurants who are able to provide food for first responders. I was lucky enough through my connections that I still have down there to connect with some of them, and then able to connect with some restaurants that had some significant damage that I've been able to provide some you know, help and consulting to try and help them get back on their feet, or whether it's their social media platforms that I'm, you know, I'm just doing out of the, you know, goodness of my heart and the love for Houston, you know, just to try and help them come back as quickly as possible, because, you know, obviously in those types of situations, there's a lot of devastation. But, you know, when I look at what I'm doing, and this is something that happens right after I'm starting this, this company, you know, I might as well reach out and see if I can provide value to anybody, because so many people invest their entire life savings into their companies and into their restaurants that, you know, I just want to do what I can to help.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that can't really be understated about West Michigan, is that that kind of network that forms once you're in it, once you've pulled back the veil. Sometimes it's hard to get under and to get in, but once you're in, that network ability and the goodness of people's hearts to help others is pretty profound. And sometimes it's a little bit frustrating because you do need to make a living. And so, you know, there's a little bit of that here in this culture as well. But at the same time, you know, people understand the idea of mentorship and cross-supporting each other's businesses in that way. And it's awesome to hear that you're able to use that for such an amazing cause.
I'm trying to balance it as much as possible. And I mean, you know, for me, I think that it's, like I said, every conversation that I have is a learning opportunity for me as well. So I'm getting something out of it. And then, you know, building connections, which is always a great thing. I mean, I think that one thing that I've learned and really and excited about is just the level of positive people that are out there and positive attitudes. And, you know, if you're, unfortunately, positivity isn't always hitting you in the face every single day. So to have a network of people who continue to be, you know, positive and lift each other up and, you know, are critiquing and helping people with their content, whether it's a website or, you know, presentation or, you know, whatever it is, you know, like you said, once that community is formed, you know, that is a bond, and that is the power of, you know, positivity, honestly, just people pouring into other people.
Yeah. So do you mind taking a step back and describing this transition that you just went through from corporate to consulting, restaurant consulting?
Sure, absolutely. So I have this idea first came probably about 6 years ago. I was sitting in an office with the CEO of a company, and he was getting emails from local restaurants who were really just looking for advice. And, you know, to no fault of his own, you know, it was sort of like, oh, you know, these people are coming at me. They want this and that from me, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I mean, he had a company to run. So, you know, for him, that was sort of, I want to help these people, but I don't really know how. And that was when the idea first got in my head of, hey, you know, I feel like that's something, there's a demand for that. Maybe I can provide the supply for that. And at that time, I didn't really know how. And I think that, you know, so that was sort of in the back of my head. A couple of years later, I still had that idea. And as a, you know, general manager of a corporate restaurant, you know, I didn't want to go out there and, you know, create a side business that would be a conflict of interest with what I was doing. So I sort of launched my own sort of marketing, personal branding business. And, you know, I tried to couple that up with what I knew well, which was hockey coaching. So sort of trying to use those on the side while, you know, as a restaurant manager working however many hours a week, you know, a father of four and trying to do two side businesses.
Not busy at all.
Yeah.
So what's going to give at that time? It's the side businesses, right? And, you know, so really when I got into the most recent company that I was with, I mean, on paper, you know, things were great. But there is still that sort of feeling of what do I really need to do? Where am I, you know, at the heart of what I think that I can give and how I'm going to do that. So really, honestly, I sat down one day and put everything on paper and said, okay, what are all of the things that I feel that I could offer? And, you know, hopefully come up with enough that I feel, even if it's not, you know, the biggest accounts that are going to pay my salary in, you know, a couple of months, which, you know, I've got to be realistic. You know, came up with all these different things to say, look, restaurants, I mean, the profit margins are so razor thin as it is. You know, what can I do to provide value to make income for me as well and, you know, be able to be attractive? So sort of just came up with, I mean, not to sound ironic in the restaurant sense, but sort of an a la carte, items that I can provide and go from there. So, you know, I decided that in order to do this, I had to just take the leap. I couldn't do this in the corporate environment, like I said before, with the conflict of interest and everything. And, you know, I had a job offer earlier in 2017 that was very appealing, but there is still something inside of me, even through the whole process, that said, well, you know, 2 or 3 years still isn't going to be yours, and you're still going to have that same feeling of, you know, wanting to try that. So let's try and make that happen right now. So that's... Yeah. That's the backstory.
That's really wise of you to be able to do that soul searching. So how long has it been since you've been totally online?
4 weeks.
Oh my God.
So very, very, very new, very, very raw. And I think that that's awesome to be able to have this conversation right now, just because one thing that I've been trying to do is, you know, document my own frustrations, successes, whatever it is, because it's just such a different world than what I've lived for the last 16 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to kind of, you know, there's this joke out there that my dad tells, and it's not, I'm going to butcher it, which, you know, pun intended. But it's that if you want to make 200 grand, start a restaurant with 500 grand and then lose 300 of it. But just to your point, cause you just said that like the restaurant industry has such slim margins. Mm-hmm. And so you clearly have a passion to stay in this industry and to work with people who may or may not have a large budget to have you come in and work with them. So like, what's the passion piece for you? Like, what do you wake up for in the morning?
Well, let me first of all tell you, you know, I'm so aware of that. And that's one of, like I said, one of those vulnerabilities, and that's something that's absolutely terrifying. So I do need to sometimes check myself and remind myself of the process of that vision. I think at the end of the day, I mean, for one, I love restaurants. I love the hospitality aspect of it. I love the emotional connection that you can get just from people. It's really a people business. And for me, that's really what it comes down to. So really every aspect of a restaurant from the dishwasher to the owner, you know, I feel that I can connect with because at some level I've done it. And I remember those moments of frustration. I remember those moments of even the aha moments, the really great moments. And I just want to find and help people find their, you know, path through that. So at the very, very basic sense of it, it's just helping people, you know, succeed where they're at. Yeah. So, you know, that's my passion. And it just so happens to be within restaurants.
Yeah, just to reflect a little bit on my background in anthropology, you know, food is one of the most ancient communal experiences that we have. And so restaurants, just like you said, they harken back to this time with people where your feeding is caring, right? And so finding that joy in it and helping them to remember the joy in it instead of being bogged down in that constant minutia of fighting for that profit margin or for the suppliers and hours and hiring and firing, and there's a lot going on.
Completely. And I think that that's something that, you know, I throughout my career, I've been lucky enough to try and help people understand that and see that purpose behind it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, really try and building a restaurant, building a business based off that, exactly what you just described. And that goes from every level. I mean, you know, there are people who I've met in fast food restaurants who sort of have a little bit of that mentality of, oh, we're just a fast food restaurant. Well, no, there's still some of that aspect there. And you, mm-hmm. even if you're just working the counter or you're working in the drive-through window, you have that opportunity to connect with somebody, you know, take advantage of it. You know, even if it's just something as small as, you know, making it personal and smiling and being genuine. You know, there is that connection there, and that goes all the way up to, you know, some of the extremely nice fine dining restaurants. Mm-hmm. So being able to sort of instill that and help people find that at whatever level they're at is so important. And, you know, to your point, those are the types of things that get lost from the owners or the managers, whoever is in charge of ultimately that culture, that if they can have that embedded in what they do from the beginning, from the interview process, then it makes it a lot easier because instead you have an entire team around you bought into that idea. Mm-hmm. And then everything else, you know, follows from there. Not to say that that fixes everything, because it doesn't. You have to realign. But I think that once you have exactly what you just described, you know, that very basic, you know, food and what that can create in a culture, you know, then the rest sort of helps everyone, you know, gain some momentum and head in the same direction.
Mm-hmm. And now, you know, here in West Michigan, we have this very, very fast growing farm to table type foodie culture. Oh, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, downtown is like exploding with new restaurants all the time. So are you trying to get ahead of that in any way, or trying to get involved with the newer restaurateurs so that you can help them evolve at an earlier stage as opposed to trying to fix later on?
Completely. So one of the things that I've, even in my short time now, the most rewarding opportunities I've had have been when I've met with people who want to buy a restaurant. And, you know, we go through the whole process of evaluating it and seeing if it's going to be viable and being able to tell them no, mm-hmm. which, you know, short term doesn't make me any money. But, you know, for me, it's more, like I said before, it's more important about the people. And if, you know, you have someone who's willing to invest half or three quarters of their life savings, their 401k, into a restaurant, I want to make sure that this is going to be something that is going to be a good investment for them and isn't going to, you know, bog them down for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely.
Or lose that. So ironically right. enough, some of the most rewarding moments I've had have been in that, hey, I don't think that this is going to be right. You know, let's look for something else. But, you know, being able to, they're all excited and want to get this thing going. And, you know, being able to tell them no, it's been some of the most rewarding just because I know that I saved them years of loss and pain.
Mm-hmm.
So, so yes, you know, getting in there. One thing that I've seen is there are some really great restaurants that have opened that lack that hospitality aspect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being able to look at from the beginning and saying, hey, we know that there's competition out there, and being able to address that and being able to have the mentality at the front door, every single person in the building is, you know, grateful and sincere that these guests chose us because we know and address the fact that there are so many other restaurants that they can pick. That's just from right there. If you can treat people with that thought process and that mentality and that heart, mm-hmm. they're gonna feel that, and it's gonna make a huge difference. So you can have mm-hmm. the best menu, you can have the best homemade beer, all of that. But if that hospitality aspect isn't there,
yeah,
that's a concern. I mean, you know it. You felt that in restaurants before.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So I think that from the beginning, that, you know, not only the financial viability and the potential of a restaurant is unbelievably important, but hey, how are you going to manage this aspect of it, you know, moving forward? What kind of training programs are you going to put in place? How are you going to make sure that this, hopefully 10 years down the road, you've succeeded because you still have that hospitality in really, really embedded into what you're doing every single day?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right. So changing gears a little bit. Tell us a little bit about your post on Medium that has gotten so much traction. I mean, what led you to write it in the first place?
So the funny thing about this is, you know, and I put it in the piece, but I found Gary and all of his content just a few months ago, and I had never really listened to podcasts. I never spent a lot of time on YouTube, consuming that kind of content. But one thing that I found really funny about it was when I first started listening, and the first time I ever heard him, I didn't like him. He was very brash and abrasive, and which listen, I mean, it had nothing to do with the language. I am a restaurant manager and coached hockey for a long time, so language doesn't get to me in any way, shape, or form. It was more of the ego and even that own mentality of, oh yeah, he got lucky and got the right investments. It's easy for him to say. And then I stumbled upon one of his Q&A sessions where he basically called out that entire mentality that I was having, that hey, people say that I got lucky and da 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 da, and I'm like, okay. So then he had my attention there, and then really what really grabbed me is when he got deep into the, you know, the positivity and the empathy and, you know, all those things that are sort of behind the bravado that he puts out. And it just also so happened to be at a time where I was getting close to launching my business, and being an entrepreneur with a lot of entrepreneurial advice really caught me into the, you know, tactical part of it. So, you know, for me, working in restaurants, and the one that I left most recently was dinner only. So during the day, I was, you know, doing tasks, whether it was prepping food or, you know, writing schedules or approving, you know, various office type work. I just put the podcast on and was consuming so much of it that I was really very quickly got to that point where I was starting to hear him say the same things over and over again. And one thing that really stood out to me was him, you know, kind of sending that message, not often, but he was sending the message of, you know, you've heard what I've had to say, and turn it off and go do it. So I kind of got to that point where, you know, I was in the last, you know, the last week of my employment and starting to have some communication with potential clients, you know, really spending time developing that. And then I got into the first week of, you know, not being in a restaurant. And I got to tell you, you know, after being a, you know, restaurant partner, general manager, whatever, for however long I was, and then one day to have that gone, it was just very strange. You know, I very much had just this feeling of leaving that night, of not being constrained to the four walls, but then at the same time sort of being terrified of everything's on me. But and that's exciting from one aspect of, if I want to try something new, I can. But also sometimes you sort of get terrified and handcuffed by that ability to be able to do whatever you want. So, you know, one thing I found myself doing just that was familiar and trying to go back to those familiar things was either listening to the podcast or, you know, I had his notifications turned on. So anytime he had a new post, I was running to that or, you know, consuming that. So I sort of the self-awareness piece of it was I noticed myself doing that and I noticed that taking away from whatever I was doing at that moment. And, you know, I kind of thought, listen, I'm listening from the standpoint of, wanting to get out there and, you know, sort of become my own media person as well. So I knew I wanted to start a podcast. I knew that I wanted to get on Medium. So why not use this opportunity to make my first Medium post about the person who introduced me to all of this and really sort of pushed me into all of this? And, you know, it's sort of in the back of my head, I thought he might think that this is pretty cool. You know, if his people tell him what it's about, or, you know, the feeling of, you know, some people had some comments like, you know, oh, haters always going to hate. Well, obviously you didn't read the piece, so that's cool. which is why, you know, it's very designed that way. I titled it that way on purpose. But, you know, the ironic part about that is I had sort of previewed it a couple times, like, hey, I'm working on this piece. You know, I'm going to put this out on this day. And I had sent it to him a couple times. And, you know, just on Twitter, he liked a couple of the posts. I'm like, okay, now I'm committed to this. So I got to hold myself accountable, which is exactly why I did it. And then the really cool thing that happened was, you know, before I put that out, I happened to be sitting at my desk one day working on my website. And his Ask Gary V show came live on Facebook, which I had never been on Facebook before, ironically enough. So it came on. I just plugged it on, and there was someone who was on. His guest was Cy Wakeman, and she was talking about leadership and some things that were really interesting. So I just typed my question in, and they actually called me. So ironically enough, you know, right before I'm posting this Medium piece, I get to have a, you know, 17-minute spot on the Ask Gary V show.
Wow.
So I used that and the piece that he had tweeted out on Medium on Twitter from Medium, to kind of use that just for connections and meeting people. And one thing that was really cool when I was on that Ask live before they called, there was someone who was asking questions about restaurants who also just happened to be from Houston. So, you know, I shot him a message just being like, hey, man, you know, give me a call or, you know, shoot me a text. Let's connect. And, you know, this particular person was in his young 20s. He's a bartender, wants to be a manager. Hey, I have experience in this, so let's talk.
Wow, so, that's awesome.
So yeah, it was all those things happened within just a few days. And, you know, it sort of turned into, I'm no longer being distracted by his content. Now I'm connecting with people who are in that community, who are more experienced than me in some areas, who can use some of my advice in some areas. So really just that sense of community that came from that was really incredible and very unexpected, actually. So that's pretty neat.
Right. Wow. That's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was in Amway, like one of the biggest things that I heard so many people do was, you know, I heard about them selling their gaming consoles because back in 2006, 2007, I mean, that was, you know, that was the thing. It was not as, social media wasn't as nearly as big as it is today. And everybody just, you know, looking down at their phones all the time. Or that, or they were disconnecting from cable. And, you know, personally, I didn't necessarily have that feel to be able to do that because I've always had that switch to be able to shut things off in my head to be able to be like, okay, now it's time for me to work on stuff. And if I miss some episodes of whatever, for me is Pat Flynn, but if I miss some things of that show, then I'm not gonna feel bad about it. I think a lot of people kind of feel guilt that they're missing on something, and that's why they find it hard to do the transition that you've been able to do. But what do you think that people find it hard to leave a lifestyle of consumerism, I guess you could say, to being a creative?
It's addicting. And at the end of the day, it's also easy, you know, to sit there and get sucked into YouTube video after YouTube video after YouTube video is pretty easy. And, you know, I think that it's people get a false sense of motivation from it. And look, I mean, there is definitely a level of motivation to it. And I think that that's so important. Mm-hmm. You know, we all need to be motivated in one way or another, but when it kind of crosses that line of being a distraction from, you know, really executing what you want to do, then that's kind of that moment where you've got to step back and be self-aware. Honestly, that's part of the reason why I was, you know, got off Facebook very early on was just that distraction part of it. So we are so just by nature, we want to know what's going on around us. We want to know what's going on with people that we know, or in this type of environment, you know, people who we connect with or, you know, have listened to that speak to us, you know, we just want to, consume so much of that as possible because, you know, it makes us feel good, makes us feel comfortable. And I think that that's something that when you are in a creative space or, you know, you are starting something new, that comfort is very nice.
Yes. Yeah. Because, you know, you're not the only one that's doing it. Right. I mean,
for sure. No, it's funny. I mean, I am self-aware and see those patterns in myself with other speakers, or even if it's, you know, a certain radio station, you know, it helps turn off my mind, which, you know, I'm learning right now. Like, now's the time I want to have that on. I mean, I want to be kind of filtering through every idea that I have going and, you know, get out of that comfort level. So I think that for me, on a personal level, I think that that's why people consume those. It's just comfortable.
Mm-hmm. So now with all this time that you have back from listening to Gary and his channel and engaging with that way, what do you think that you are going to start working on?
So I am actually probably next week going to record my first podcast, which I'm super excited about. I already have, you know, just from those connections, I have four or five people that I want to interview and kind of hear their story. And, you know, from there, I want to get on Medium. I want to just provide value and just sort of take everything that I've been through as a restaurant manager and just kind of document that and share that on one side of it. And obviously there's the actual tangible business side. So, you know, I'm early on, but I'm noticing, you know, different times where I'm more productive on focusing on clients or communicating with potential clients and, you know, trying to just get in that space of now, you know, I'm scheduling my week out based on whatever I have going on. And if I'm in this environment, so if I'm working at home, maybe that's a really great environment for me to, you know, put the headphones on and get into the, you know, nuts and bolts of, you know, what I'm doing for clients, putting things together. And if I'm in the office, which obviously, you know, is a completely different environment, then I can maybe focus on, you know, some of the, you know, personal brand or whatever you want to call that, that's building up that, you know, this, I'm writing this piece to show that I'm an expert on whatever topic it may be. And, you know, getting that out there and communicating with people through social media that way.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Next section as we're winding down here, rapid fire questions.
Great.
Again, these are just going to be ones that we ask relatively quickly, but your answers don't have to be nearly as quick. And in fact, we might just kind of engage a little bit more depending on where your answer goes. So, you ready, sir?
I'm ready.
All right. What are your three top favorite books that you would recommend to others or gift to them?
So, one book that I gift more than any other book, I love gifting books. I think that's a great, great question to ask. It's called Setting the Table by Danny Meyer, restaurateur out of New York. This book was given to me somewhere around 2009, 2010. And it just became a sort of a go-to anytime I was struggling with anything regarding restaurants. You know, Danny Meyer has a very people-first process and mentality. So I think that that one definitely stands out. I mean, above and beyond any other book that I've ever gifted is that one. Next up would be the Oz Principle, another leadership book. And, you know, that one's super interesting because it sort of gets to the heart of owning situations and, you know, addressing the way that people blame others or the environment. So that one sort of was very, very tactical. I could pull a lot from that and share that and created some leadership sessions, some one-on-one sessions with my managers. And have been able to use some of those tactics now when talking with restaurant owners. And one that actually just came out, ironically enough, also the person who was being interviewed on the Ask Gary Vee show, Cy Wakeman's book, No Ego. Again, another leadership book that kind of gets to the, hey, you know, I'm going to focus the mirror, turn the mirror around and focus on me and kind of rising above whatever circumstance I'm in. That one, like I said, it's new. But I've already gifted it a couple times, so I see that one moving up my charts pretty quickly.
Nice.
Cool. What is a fact from today that would blow the mind of someone from 10 years ago?
Oh, that's a good one. I would probably say that Blockbuster doesn't exist.
Yes. And not even Netflix exists in the way that it killed Blockbuster by,
right,
you know.
Right.
That is mind blowing.
Yeah.
What is the smallest decision you've made that has had the largest impact on your life?
Wow. I guess it would be getting a job at a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is I just figured out my origin story of why I wanted to get into restaurants. Even when I was playing hockey, I wanted to be a server to make money. And I never knew why. And then it hit me just 2 weeks ago that when I was in first grade, we had a family friend whose son was in college. And I idolized this person. His name was Bill. I completely idolized him. And he got a job as a server at Carrabba's in Houston. And they were just opening, and we got to go to their friends and family night. And from that moment on, in first grade, I wanted to be like Bill and be a server.
Aww.
It's so funny that I just realized that that's where it came from. You know, I very vividly remember that. And I remember idolizing this guy every time he came home from college, whatever it is. So I think that getting into that coffee shop was sort of my, hey, I was putting applications in restaurants, but no one was hiring me because they didn't have experience as a server. And, you know, I said, well, I'm just going to go do this. The hours fit. I had zero intention of it turning into a career.
Wow. That's cool. Who would have known?
Right?
What is a basic life skill that you are constantly amazed people lack?
I have to go with empathy. I think that it's a skill because you do have to practice it. You know, when I work with people and I kind of listen to what they're going through, a lot of times people are putting themselves before others, even just in the thought process, not even necessarily with time and money, but just taking a step back and kind of understanding other people's scenarios really helps you problem solve and really helps you connect on a personal level. And I think that that's something that I recognized in myself pretty early on that I can read people's scenarios. I can read people's body language. And when I work with managers and, you know, I work with people who are in charge of other people, or, you know, if there's a conflict and I'm trying to work, you know, help resolve a client conflict between two people, their walls are up so big. They're so defensive that they can't even see that, hey, you're actually agreeing on this. you're just not seeing it from each other's perspective because you're putting yourself first. And, you know, I'm completely empathetic to that because, especially in restaurant environments, because I know those so well, so I can speak from that. If there's a shift that's going wrong or something happens that, you know, is stressful, it's just human nature to worry about yourself first. Mm-hmm. And if you could even be in the best, you know, team oriented, run company or, you know, whatever, and then something happens and then it turns into a, you know, dog eat dog, I've got to make sure that I'm taken care of. You know, I understand why that happens, because I mean, when you're thrown into the wilderness or something like that happens, it's just nature. But being able to look at that, even from a management standpoint, and being able to say, hey, you need to first understand that this happens and accept that that happens, and then go into how can we make that, make sure that doesn't happen next time.
Mm-hmm. That's really good advice. I actually have a friend who owns a company here in town, and he says that the only rule in his company is to not get defensive. Because then you can't have those conversations exactly like what you're saying.
I mean, that is just, and it's so hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I think being able to reflect on that is so important, and bring that to the front of the people's minds. I mean, it's courageous to stand out there and say that. And I think that that's something that, you know, when you talk about something like empathy, or you talk about, you know, putting others before yourselves, you know, you don't always get immediate buy-in on that. You kind of get a little bit of that, you know, oh, this is just kumbaya, whatever. But no, you know, when you can stand out front and be courageous and say, this is why this is important, then it's easier to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so last question is perfect for a West Michigan-based business. How can someone be a difference maker in their community?
Just meet people.
Mm-hmm.
It's so amazing. As soon as you just start talking to people and meeting people and having, you know, zero expectation of getting anything back from them, I think that that's something that is so important, because when you hear other people's stories and you understand what people are going through, or, you know, you can maybe share that back to them, what you're going through, that it just becomes a relationship, and understanding what's going on in your community and understanding what people are going through.
Mm-hmm.
It's so powerful. And hearing other people's stories, I mean, you know, at some point, you know, I think, well, no one's interested in hearing my story. But I'm interested in hearing so many other people's stories that in reverse, yeah, people are interested in hearing what I go through. So I just think putting yourself out there in the first place, and reaching out, and you know, the funny thing is, I mean, I've met more people just through, you know, social media and using that. And that's a very, you know, practical, you know, tactical thing that Gary taught, you know, getting on there and using that to, you know, build a community. But, you know, there's so many people that are, you know, out there doing their thing, who, you know, maybe they're struggling, maybe they're succeeding, but they're just interested in talking. I mean, funny story, this past Friday, I went downtown and was just giving, you know, some free marketing advice to some food trucks down there. I mean, really, like, I'm going to go shake some hands. I'm going to say, hey, you know, here's something about Instagram you maybe don't know. And, you know, building connections that way, literally, I don't, like, here is free advice, you know, whatever. Like, I know how hard it is to have a food truck. And especially, you know, being in Grand Rapids a week ago, the weather was so hot that these food trucks were severely affected by that. So
yeah.
I'm just going to go out there, you know, and I heard some really cool stories about why they started these things. And then I went to a coffee shop to, you know, kind of work on my website a little bit and whatever. And there happened to be a piece from Art Prize sitting next to me. I took a selfie with it, put it out there. And I tweeted and Instagrammed to the artist who was, you know, literally lives 2 miles from my house. So, you know, we connected. He, you know, he's a full-time job during the day, but he has his business that he focuses on at night. So, I mean, it's just putting yourself out there and finding ways to, you know, just hear people's stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. So as we're about to wrap up, you know, if someone was wants to actually start working on their own work and not listening to all the big names that are out there constantly, what are some steps that you can think that they can take to be less plugged in and more creative in their own work?
First of all, try. Just try it. Try things. You know, if you have an idea, maybe document it. You know, my thing is I have a lot of ideas when I'm driving, which is obnoxious because I don't want to stop and write something down because that's extremely dangerous. So my office is in Grand Haven, which is about a 45-minute drive from my house. So one thing that I started doing was, you know, just recording my thoughts of the day on the way home, and maybe something comes from that. Then I'm like, hey, I'm going to write this down tomorrow. I'm going to go in and I'm going to focus on this idea and see how it goes. Because it, you know, sometimes there's so much advice. You go to Google and you want to look for something, you're going to find 10 different answers and each one's going to contradict the other. So I think trying, look, don't get me wrong. I think that that's a great resource. Using your resources is really powerful, but not putting all your eggs in that basket. You know, so that you have the ability to be creative and try new things, and you know, if something's working, great, go with it. And if something's not working, you know, maybe there's something you really believe in it, but then you see why it's not working, then tweak it a little bit. But I think just trying, I mean, that's, you know, for me in these first 4 weeks, that's been my thing. I'm going to try. And if it doesn't stick, then I'm going to be okay with that. I'm not going to think that, I'm a failure. I'm not going to think that the whole world is falling around me. I'm just going to get out there and try something different.
Mm-hmm. It's good advice.
Well, where can people find you if they want to get a more, you know, additional help, if they're a restaurateur or they just want to, you know, get to know you a bit more?
If they want to find me on Twitter and Instagram, my handle is M Thorpe. That's Thorp. And then it's XXI, Roman numerals for 21. 100% of the time, I will answer your messages. Tweet me, message me, DM me, whatever it is, I'll answer. I'm super passionate about that. And then my company's name is Capstone Hospitality, and my website's capstonehospitality.net.
All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today, and definitely enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Too.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that cup of coffee, Veronica.
You bet.
And there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed our chat with Mike. You know, I love seeing people who have, you know, spent years in academia or the corporate arena make that transition as well as he has. You know, you can tell that he provides a ton of value to his clients. And I think it's just a matter of time, really, before he becomes an online guru himself. I mean, he already has a heck of a following over on Twitter, actually, already. So, you know, I'll be sure to put the link to his profile in our show notes for you to go over there and say hi. Speaking of Twitter, he is a big Periscope user as well. So if you want to keep tabs on what he's up to, you can follow him through that platform. And as far as the show note extras go for this session, because of all of his videos being in Periscope and Periscope not allowing us to embed them in WordPress, we've decided to give you guys related videos for today's session. So the first video is of Gary's. It's entitled "The Last Video You Have to Watch in 2017." And, you know, there's probably a really good chance that it applies to 2018 too. And frankly, I have to say it's become one of my recent favorite videos of his. Recently, Mike has been getting a ton of great info from Asai Wakeman. And so the next video is Gary interviewing her on his show. And Mike also mentioned that he's a fan of Danny Meyer. So I included Danny's TEDx talk about how the practices in fine dining can be applied to any kind of restaurant and why they should be. And finally, Mike also mentioned one of his favorite books is The Oz Principle. So I have a review of it by Michael Schaefer of the Christian Bookshelf on what that book is all about. So if you want to continue that conversation on your own, there's some pretty good resources that I think you guys should check out, and reach out to Mike again on Twitter. In the next session, Veronica joins me again as we talk to another Midwestern-based entrepreneur. This time it's one of the folks I've met through Arnie's Facebook group course. And her name is Tori Reid, and you can consider her a bit of a, I guess you could say, a content production maven. She's been featured in a number of online publications such as HuffPo, Lifehacker, Startup Nation, and many more. And having originally been considered a blogging expert, Tori recently expanded her expertise as her group is really starting to pick up steam. Yeah, she recently crossed the 1,000 member mark. And I got to say, you know, I'm just right now getting to 200 people in the Junto. So 1,000, that's one heck of a pretty awesome milestone. So in our chat, Veronica and I find out how she's been building her brand in the last couple of years, how she got her publicity snowball moving in the first place, and some ideas to use in crafting messages that actually sell. So stay tuned for it coming out in a couple of weeks. So guys, that's pretty much it for session 114. Remember, if you want to start running your own online business, Fizzle is a great place to start building real connections, finding the right content, and getting feedback on what you're doing for a great price. Today, you can start for free for 5 weeks by going to newinceptions.com/Fizzle. So that said, thanks for joining Veronica, myself, and Mike today. And until next time, gang, dig in, have fun, and take care on whatever you're creating. We'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.